Voice of Reason Broadcast Network presents The Heretics Hour with Carolyn Yeager. Carolyn Yeager brings you news and commentary on Holocaust revisionism, World War II history, free speech issues, and more. And now, here's Carolyn.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for tuning in to the Heretics Hour, a two-hour live broadcast presented by yours truly, Carolyn Yeager. Tonight, my guest, and I put that in quotes, is going to be heard only on a recording. But that's all right, because he lives in Germany, where it's about 3 a.m. right now. I wouldn't expect anyone, let alone a busy and hard-working intellectual like he is, to be up and giving a radio interview at such an hour. His name is Manfred Kleine Hartlage. He is one of the few German academics on the right, I believe, and his specialty has become Islam and why it doesn't belong in Europe. I had him on my rather short-lived Revisionist Report program on Republic Broadcasting twice, and he's a charming person. More on him shortly, but first I'd like to take care of some other news. Speaking of the Revisionist Report, all of those podcasts, which are no longer in the RBN archives, by the way, have been uploaded to my new website and will be available shortly. Yes, I have a new website, but it's still under construction, which is why I haven't announced it yet. I would like it to be more complete before I do. I don't like to present myself in disarray. But you can go there now if you want. It's carolynyeager.net. Excuse me. My old site, carolynyeager.com, is still up and will remain up until my contract with the provider comes due. I think sometime in December. Let me get a drink of water here. My new site has expanded capabilities, which includes housing all of my podcasts, so they will remain for posterity, no matter what might happen to their originating networks and archives. It's also easier for me to maneuver. Once I learn it, that is, it's a steep learning curve for me, but not impossible. I've already learned quite a bit. I don't want to fail to draw your attention to my newest article, just posted last night at Elie Wiesel Cons The World. It's titled, Relative of Shlomo Wiesel Says He Died in 1943, Not at Buchenwald. Shlomo is Elie Wiesel's father. This is brand new information, and along with my article from September 12th, titled Gigantic Fraud Carried Out for Wiesel Nobel Prize, these two are key revisionist works that make giant steps in disproving the claim of Elie Wiesel to be a concentration camp survivor. The earlier article shows irrefutably that Wiesel is not in the famous Buchenwald liberation photo that got him the Nobel Prize. And this latest article gives reason to question whether anything in Night fits Elie Wiesel's real experience. I hope you can see how big this is. Because no one I know of has gone into more depth into the life of this man than I. And I have to blow my own horn on it because no one else is drawing attention to me. But on these two so important articles, I've had the invaluable help of a silent partner. Without his assistance, I would not have been able to write these articles with the quality graphics that I have, for one thing. And there are other things he does. But he prefers to remain in the background for now. I knew when I started this website, Elie Wiesel Cons The World, that success required participation from others. I have not had much participation because it does take specialized research, but the right people have shown up at the right time, and that's what counts. I am dedicated to this mission and ask that you spread awareness of this website and repost the articles in as many places as you can. Now back to Manfred and the main subject this evening, which is more about our culture. What is our culture and what does it mean to us? The past two programs featured wonderful guests, William Fink talking about the destruction of our original United States Christian culture by Jews, and the end result of which a good example is the city of Philadelphia that he amusingly calls Filthadelphia. And last week, Rodney Martin bringing us the racially based culture of the Third Reich Germany with a look at their movie industry. That was a very popular show, and I had, and Rodney also, we had a lot of emails about it. Tonight, we're going to look at culture in its broad meaning, which I will argue comes down to race and religion. These two necessary elements of any culture are exactly what has disintegrated in our Western white civilization. I have come to believe that we need a common religion of our race, and our religion must support our race in order for us to be strong and unified, not divided. I think there is a great deal of confusion among and within our so-called white leadership about these foundational realities. Our religion can only be Christianity, I have come to believe. For those who immediately react negatively to that, let me add that it does not have to be, nor should it be, Judeo-Christianity, which has infiltrated the Christian churches and brought with it the universalism that the Jews love to impose on us, though not upon themselves. Our Christianity must be a religion for white Western man only, which brings in the race issue. It is the invasions against and the scattering apart of these two bulwarks that has led to our disintegration as a strong cultural entity. This kind of talk will step on the toes of those who have been brought up on a diet of freedom before all else, as I was. But we only think we are free. We are now dealing with survival of our race, and this requires some revised thinking and revised expectations. We will be able to explore this more in the second hour when you are invited to call in with your comments. Manfred Kleine Hartlage is a German social scientist and a Christian conservative who wants Europe to remain Christian. Because of the peculiar situation of Europe since World War II, by which I mean the immigration mainly of those from the lands of Islam, Manfred, like so many others, sees the threat in Europe to Europe in terms of Islamization. While you may not see that as the main threat, you have to admit that it is a main threat. He doesn't talk about race, but it is implied when speaking about culture and in speaking directly to the German people. Manfred created a German blog site called Korrektheiten, and more recently, within the past year, an English language blog called German Views at german-views.de, which I like very much, and where I found a video by him titled Liberal and Conservative Criticism of Islam. It was originally done in German. Manfred created the English language version of the video for German Views readers. The narrative is taken directly from an article he wrote, originally in German, published on pinews.net. PI stands for politically incorrect. I think he explained so many things so well that I immediately wanted to present it to my listeners tonight. So what you're going to hear now is the first 15 minutes of the video with Manfred speaking. His English is very good, but not perfect, so you'll need to listen carefully. Luckily, this program can always be listened to again. Then we'll take our break and hear the last 8 minutes or so in the second half hour. He starts out by mentioning the hateful anti-Islam debates during the Berlin local election campaign between the right-wing and left-wing anti-Islamists, and which resulted in neither party making any gains. In other words, the left and the right are stamping out each other. He then argues for the right perspective over the left. So here is Manfred.
Now the Berlin campaign is over and the hateful debates between liberal and conservative critics of Islam have ceased, I use the opportunity to make some remarks on the ideological difference between the liberal and the conservative wing of criticism of Islam. The liberal criticism is justified when referring to the attitude of Islam to terror and violence, or on its subordination of women. Its anti-Semitism, its collectivism, is theocratism, is anti-democratic bias, in one word, its totalitarian character. However, what we have to do is not only to criticize Islam and to blame the leftists for being its useful idiots. What we have to do is to fight Islamization. And the first question we have to ask when we want to do so is, why is Islam marching forward in Europe? This question is not trivial. We are not living in the 8th century when the blanks word were enough to make Bedouins invade even France. Nowadays, the West is in any aspect, in economy, science, technology, whatever, so superior to Islam that we have to ask why, nevertheless, this West seems to be becoming an Islamic colony. If this is not due to the strength of Islam, it must be a consequence of Western weakness. To make it short, Islam is marching forward because we tolerate mass immigration of Muslims, because we are betrayed by our own elites, because the European peoples are shrinking and aging, and therefore are, for demographic reasons, unable to fight an expanding Islamic community. And Islam is marching forward because we don't manage to dissolve the ties between the immigrant Muslims and to integrate them in the European people, in our case, in the German people. These four phenomena are not independent of each other. Why do we, and I speak of the majority of the Germans, tolerate the mass immigration of Muslims? We do so because we have forgotten, or we were made forget, respectively, that it is our unalienable and sovereign right to let immigrate or not to let immigrate whoever we want. We have been made forget that we are entitled to exclude anyone we are not prepared to welcome in our country from immigration here, and that we don't have to apologize if we do so. Just because this is our country, which was built up with the sweat of our ancestors, and it was defended with their blood, and they didn't so in the expectation that we are prepared to waste it to anyone who wants to come to Germany. Having an own country means that you are entitled to decide with whom you want to live together in one and the same social space. There is no human right to emigrate in other people's countries, but there is a human right to feel at home in one's own country. Critics of Islam, who insist on opposing only the immigration of Muslims, but not of people from other regions or believers of other religions, and who want thereby to prove that they are no racists, just postulate an exception from the rule that mass immigration is something to be tolerated, and in this way they take the burden of proof instead of burdening the opponent with it. Arguing this way, however, means that there is something as an ethnically defined we, that's to say, a people, which is obviously a matter of course. Nevertheless, this matter, of course, has been denied by the multicultural mainstream. People are communities of solidarity. That's to say, they are based on mutual expectations of solidarity, and as long as these expectations can be maintained, the people is existent, but it will inevitably disappear. For example, when it is persuaded that there is no such thing like a people, and instead there are only individuals. In this case, this people will disappear, and it will be replaced. But it will not be replaced by a society of individuals, who perhaps are not so solidaric with each other, and all the more it is not replaced by a worldwide community of the free and the equal, as infantile liberals imagine. It will be replaced by other peoples who don't afford the decadent luxury to question their own existence. And it will be replaced by communities in which the internal solidarity is the highest religious, unquestionable command. It will be replaced, for example, by Muslims. Solidarity or social cohesion doesn't emerge just from nothing. It must, as we can see at the example of Muslims, be internalized as a matter of course. It does emerge when the consciousness not only to be an isolated individual, but a part of an overarching context is shaping the way of life and the view on life of a whole society. Traditionally, this was a matter of course in Europe too, and we do exist, and there is a European civilization just because it was a matter of course. The survival of these peoples and this civilization is at stake, because the consciousness, the awareness of this transcendency is declining. Transcendency, something that is going beyond the existence of the individual person, has many aspects. You are embedded in a generational continuity. You continue yourself with your own children. There is the belonging to a community, for example, a people or a religion, or both. There is an awareness of responsibility in the face of God. However, we can hardly say that these kinds of transcendency are still shaping the way of life in our society. The main political ideologies, and in this context, just the liberalism with its thinking from the point of view of the individual and its claims to freedom, is not able to give reasons for such transcendency and will be inclined to fight its manifestations. A society that regards having children not as the natural destiny of man, but just as a possible model of life among others. A society that proclaims a human right on abortion, or does not only tolerate homosexuality, but even propagating it. That views women as suppressed if they are not making a career. In short, a society that is avoiding the question, which are the necessary preconditions that must be given if a people as a community of solidarity would be able to survive, and that is neglecting social duties and social ties in favor of individual self-realization, and who is denigrating anyone who is not, who does not agree with this point of view. Such a society has no chance to survive, just for demographic reasons. Those who criticize Islam just because Muslims reject all this and don't practice it may criticize it as long as he wants. No, not as long as he wants. He will criticize it, Islam, until the Muslims are strong enough to stifle him. It makes no sense asking Muslims to integrate into our society and into our people, for they know that this people is declining. Integration into such a people means embarking on the Titanic. I know my liberal friends, and I know that they are determined to misunderstand me because they don't want to deal with their illusions. Therefore, I make clear, what I'm talking about is not to abolish freedom, but to preserve an order that makes such freedom possible without destroying the whole social fabric. Freedom is possible where there are ties that do not consist only in abiding the law of the state. Liberal ideology, with its typical misregard of these social ties, has become socially dominant because this ideology has been internalized as a matter of course. This kind of ideology, this liberalism, will destroy liberty because it will destroy its preconditions. In 20 years, the Liberal Party is over, in this way or another. Either we will have remembered that we are we and want to preserve our existence, or Islam will end the party. Criticism of Islam will remain toothless if it is not at the same time a conservative criticism of Western culture. And by the way, nobody should have the illusion that the results would be essentially different if instead of the Muslims, other immigrants in millions came to Germany. When I'm talking with American rights, they ask me, what's your problem with Islam? The problems you have with the Muslims, we have with blacks and Hispanics. That's to say, denial of education, denial of integration, ethnic warfare, crime, abuse of social welfare. Even a man as the Turkish Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan, who said assimilation is a crime against humanity, has its non-Muslim twins in the form of several Mexican presidents who ask U.S. citizens of Mexican origin regularly and publicly to see themselves as a part of the Mexican nation and to reconquer by migration California and Texas. Of course, there is no question that Islam is a particularly aggressive culture, but this does not mean that any immigration of non-Muslims is without problem just because they are non-Muslims. The model of an order in liberty, as it is practiced in the West, and which is globally and historically unique, is based on an entire system of cultural preconditions that are linked together and that have been that have emerged in centuries here and only here, and that are not understood in other parts of the world, let alone practiced there. Therefore, it is risky to let people from other cultures immigrate to whom these values are more or less foreign. And the mere fact that someone is no Muslim doesn't by itself qualify him for immigration. And if it did, it would be nevertheless our right to refuse him. So, if you're not prepared to say and to stand by and to do the necessary to preserve your own people, you can forget your little bit criticism of Islam. And by the way, it is a symptom of decadence that I'm forced to explain such matters, of course. And the Germans, who need to adopt Americans or Israelis as ersatz heroes because they don't dare to be patriots, will not be able to fight Islamization at all.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was a lot said there. I hope you were able to take most of it in. I've listened to it several times now, so I'm hearing things that I didn't quite come through before. So I know these things take it. Sometimes you need to listen often, more than once or twice. But one thing that stood out was that to me that Manfred is saying that criticizing that so many of the liberals are criticizing Islam for the wrong reasons, and this has been my complaint about the liberals who are criticizing, Jews or Zionists, as they like to put it, here in the U.S., and they criticize Israel. They do all this criticism in my thinking so often for the wrong reasons, and then our right wingers and our white nationalists pick this up because they find these liberals, or particularly if they're Jewish liberals, criticizing right-wing Israel, and then they think that's so great that they start praising these left-wingers for what they're doing as though they're in some kind of solidarity with us. And they are not, because as long as they are anti-racist, or as long as they are criticizing Jews or Israel for their racism rather than for their theft, which is what it really is, their theft of other people, then they're criticizing for the wrong reason. And there's a lot that I would like to say about that. I don't know if I've made myself too clear. But Manfred says that we are weak in the West. He comes right out, I like that, and says we're not succeeding as he's speaking about Islam, but not because our opponent is so strong, but because we are so weak. And I don't hear too many people saying that, or if they talk about us being weak, they don't seem to have any solutions for how to overcome this weakness. I'm watching the time here, but I think that for Manfred, being a German, being able to say what he says in Germany, stronger words than we say here, than our so-called white nationalist leaders even say here when they're speaking of immigration or other cultures. So we'll go on with that when we come back from this news break, and I'll see you on the other side of it.
We'll be right back with more on the Heretics Hour. You're listening to VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
U.S. will be sending 100 combat troops into Central Africa in the coming days. They'll be tasked with training and advising forces battling the Ugandan Lord's Resistance Army rebels. Those rebels are said to be, among other things, murderers, kidnappers, and rapists. They also plan to remove the head of the army on the battlefield, Joseph Kony. And we want to talk more about this and shed some light on what may be behind this. To help me do that, I'm joined now by Robert Naiman of Just Foreign Policy. Hey there, Robert. You know, from what I understand, these are military advisors, as they're called. They'll be headed to Uganda, South Sudan, the Central African Republic, and Congo. Leaders have been in power, though, for decades, these same leaders who they're now going to fight. Why Africa? Why now?
Well, first of all, this is a longstanding policy, the U.S. policy of opposition to the Lord's Resistance Army. And I think it's worth bearing in mind, of course, U.S. has got a lot of military conflicts going on in a lot of places. But in this case, it's not violating international law. It's not sending troops into Uganda against the will of the government of Uganda. It's in cooperation with the government of Uganda. And it's at least not blatantly contradicting U.S. law, because there's already existing U.S. law that says that the U.S. should combat the Lord's Resistance Army, and the president invoked that law in his letter to Speaker Boehner.
But Robert, if it's always been a policy of the U.S., what about the timing? Why now?
Well, the claim is two things. The claim of the administration is that the, which appears to be correct, is that the existing efforts have not been sufficient, and so those efforts need to be ramped up. And it's worth noting that this is also what human rights groups have been saying. In fact, Human Rights Watch praised the administration, said this is exactly what we've been pushing for, and we're not calling for the U.S. to be, you know, directly involved in combat. And the president has said U.S. troops aren't going to be involved directly in combat. They're going to be advising. They will only be involved in combat if they're attacked and it's necessary for self-defense.
I mean, all those things aside, whether or not it's legal, you mentioned the U.S. Has its hands full right now in a couple other military conflicts, Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya. This could potentially cost a whole lot of money. I mean, how do you think the president can justify that right now?
Well, it's important to have a sense of scale. The United States is sending 100 advisors to Uganda. The United States has 100,000.
Let's return to the Heretics Hour, brought to you by VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com. And now here's Carolyn.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We just heard the first part of a talk by Manfred Kleine Hartlage of Germany about the threat of Islam to Europe and the threat of foreign cultures to all of our white nations, including, he mentioned, the Hispanic threat to the United States and also the blacks, and that we don't appreciate the threat of Islam to Europe because we don't have that problem yet in the United States, although it is beginning to grow. He's absolutely right about that. Those who are more tuned into Europe are aware of the threat of Islam and, realize, how serious it is. Now, you know, European nations are much smaller than the United States. Now, we all know that, but people kind of forget some of these things when they think about the number of, Turks, say, that are in Germany, say, well, that isn't so much or that isn't so bad. But for a country like Germany, it is bad. And the thing is, it's going to grow very fast because of the birth rates. Now, I was kind of getting on the idea that, he does come out and said that we are weak and, why we're weak. And we're weak because in Manfred's view, we don't have solidarity, and solidarity comes from common structures such as religion, and for him, religion is a big part of it. I'm trying to put religion together with race tonight. So I'll go on and say that he said in what we heard that people are communities of solidarity, which with mutual expectations. He uses the word solidarity a lot. As long as expectations can be maintained, he said the people are existent, but if it becomes that there's no such thing as a people, but only individuals, which is our modern, liberal globalist thinking that people can be replaced by any other kind of people, that we're all individuals looking out after our own, individual interests. Then this is what takes away our solidarity as people, which is considered to be something either passe or something dangerous because it reeks or just even hints of nationalism. So, then he says, if this is the case that we're just a bunch of individuals, we will be replaced. Our community will be replaced. He says, for example, by Muslims. He's speaking about Europe and particularly Germany. Of course, it's even worse in France, much worse. The second comes from making individual freedom or rights be more important. Well, I kind of talked about that. He says we have to be part of an overarching context that shapes the way and view of the whole society. And he speaks of transcendency, that we have lost the sense of transcendent, again, because of this materialistic, individualistic, secular thinking. And if we see having children not as the nature or destiny of man, and this is really meaningful because we don't see having children as the nature or destiny of man. Some people see it more than others just because of, I don't know why, because they just get those ideas. A lot of us never saw that. And thought that, you know, focused on the freedom, individual part, which is what I did. And then we see, well, we could do that or we can do something else. It's not important. But at one time, having children was just something that you would never interfere with. It was your destiny, so to speak. It makes us feel today that we don't have control over our nature or destiny. And we like to think that we should have control. Well, this leads to the loss of our community, of our being as a people. And so I'm recognizing that that many cherished ideas that we have taken on, some of us, have to be given up. I realize a lot of people don't like it, and I wouldn't have liked it. That's just we have to be presented with these choices and these hard choices, and we have to be encouraged to consider taking the tougher road here and the road of solidarity. And that's why I say it requires both racial thinking and a common religion, because otherwise it can't happen. That's why we don't have that anymore, and that's why it's why we don't have it. So now he speaks of, I said that. Okay, and he says that Islam is not just a religion, it's a comprehensive system regulating all areas of life. That in Islam, there's no separation between religion, politics, and law. He has said that he doesn't like that about Islam, and he doesn't want that for us in that way, but it does make them very strong. And this is the thing that we have to understand, and we have to put up some kind of strength in the face of that, even as we put up some kind of strength in the face of the mestizo racial beliefs and feelings that they are a people who want to reconquest, or if you just have all the Mexicans and mestizos who want to come here just for economic reasons, they're not interested in that reconquest necessarily, but they realize that it's happening, that they're going to, you know, be in the majority, and therefore they vote and they put in the people they want and they put in the laws and the policies they want and so on. So they're taking over our country in that sense, because they still have lots of children. So this is something that what is going to change is for us, certainly not more of this secular thinking is not going to do it. I think I better put on the last 8 minutes of Monfred's talk here before I run out of time, and then I'll discuss that. We'll discuss that a little bit. He starts out speaking about 9/11 and the liberal view of Islam, which is different from, he says, the conservative view, and then questions if the clash of civilization has any meaning, which he says it is not the right way to think about it. Okay, let's listen.
Liberal critics of Islam used to reject in a very hateful tone any doubt of the official version of 9/11. And given the implausibility of that version, this shows that with the 9/11 narrative, there is a certain basic perception of the world that is at stake for them. This perception is the paradigm of the clash of civilization that is describing world politics in terms of a fight between the West and the Islam. I admit that at the first sight, this paradigm is plausible, and I admit that therefore I did support it myself a long time, but I had to reject it because some crucial questions are not to be answered in the context of this theory. If it is true that the political main front line is that between the West and Islam, why are so many people who promote the Islamization of the West at the same time promoting the Westernization of the Islamic world? Why, for example, does Great Britain, as the one European country that is most engaged in the military fight against Islamic countries, at the same time the country that is in the most masochistic way submitting itself to Islamization? If the US are the spearhead in the fight of the West against Islam, why Why is the U.S. at the same time the main supporter of Turkey in joining the EU, and why do they pursue a strategy to the Muslim infiltration of France due to WikiLeaks? We know, meanwhile, that the U.S. government in France is active, engaging in the building up of networks of migrants and supporting them to promote immigrants and especially Muslims in social key positions. We know that they are forcing French politicians to support such a policy. We know that they urge universities and museums and schools on any channels to manipulate the perception of history of the French in the interest of migrants and especially of Muslims. We know that they abuse American English teachers in France as influence agents to propagate this ideology. And we know that the U.S. Embassy in France is sharing experience with the French Ministry of the Interior how to deal with opposition critical of immigration. And we know that they are actively envisaging to install a black or a Muslim as a president of the French Republic. And this is what we know by WikiLeaks. And such a project is not only typical for Obama, though he it may be most important to him, but the difference between Democrats and Republicans in America on foreign issues is less than that of Social Democrats or Christian Democrats in Germany. All this is obviously incompatible with the leading paradigm of the clash of the civilizations, but it is compatible with the anti-globalist paradigm, which says that the dissolution of structures and particularly the disempowering of the national states and the fostering of global mass migration is part of a concept of rule. The liberal ideology wouldn't be the ruling ideology if it wasn't the ideology of the ruling class. There is a reason why one has to apologize if one is not if one does not favor a general human right on migration or any other of these so-called rights that are part of the liberal destruction of society. There is a reason why big business funded foundations spend billions to propagate mass immigration, and why they play the supporters of minority rights and philanthropes. This is not simply a question of PR or image. It is based on the knowledge that destruction of peoples, of states, of religion and of family means at the same time the destruction of any structure that makes human political solidarity possible. So it is the destruction of structures which are opposed to the establishment of a world regime. This is the ideological and the power political background of the Eurabia project. That's to say, the project of a fusion of Europe and the Muslim Arab world. It is not aiming at the establishment of a new civilization, and it has nothing to do with democracy. Organizing chaos in this way means systematically overstressing the ability of the national state to create something like order, claim for a global migration management, and in general the strengthening of supranational organizations like the EU or the UN that are not to be controlled in a democratic way, seems to suggest itself, but it is a consequence of the self-created inability of the national state to manage the problems. It is a problem. It is a program to the deliberate de-democratization of the West, and at the same time, a program to the destruction of the Western as well as the Islamic culture. There is no reason to triumph at all. as some critics of Islam do, when Western troops are more or less successful in invading Islamic countries. On the one hand, those interventions contribute to the strengthening of the Islamists, and on the other hand, the westernization of the Islamic world is just one side of a coin whose other side is the decomposition of the West. Islam is just a particularly aggressive catalyst of this process of decomposition, and Islamization is not far more than a collateral damage, or from a certain point of view, a collateral benefit of a politically induced globalization, denationalization, and de-democratization. Anyone who criticizes Islam has to be aware that the shortcomings and the dark sides of Western societies and the Western political model have to be discussed, because if we don't discuss them, we will never be able to understand, let alone to fight Islamization. And liberal critics of Islam, who denigrate the right criticism of globalism in the most evil PC manner as a right-wing radical or as communist, because it is at the same time critical of capitalism, those liberal critics of Islam who are not prepared to consider the arguments of the right are fostering and not fighting Islamization.
Okay, that's the end, ladies and gentlemen. And he says that if we're not fighting for it, we're fostering. If we're not fighting against it, we're fostering Islamization. Once again, there he was going more into the problem of well, who is the enemy? You know, and of course, it's our globalist plutocrats, and it is the ruling class who have this ideology to bring about a different kind of world in which they are in control, and there's no strong peoples who are deciding their own fate for themselves. That's kind of the general way that I see it. But still in all, we're constantly being played around with as to seeing, a problem here, a problem there. For example, this Occupy Wall Street now. I'm very suspicious of being for this because of just the nature of it. This thing of going out into the streets and tearing things up and whole crowds of people and then masses and so on, it isn't our way. And we've never done this. It's not the way we do things. And I don't think it's a good way to do things. It's a way to. This reminds me always of the French Revolution and the terrible consequences that came from that. And every time this kind of thing has come about, it ends up with very bad consequences. Not what the people are imagining they're going to get. So we shouldn't be so silly about it and so easily taken in by it. But anyway, I don't have anything more to say about that because it still remains to be seen, but I don't think it bodes very well. Destruction of structures, he talked about. That's what I'd like to comment on a little bit. Our structures are so important. The structures of our civilization have come from, in large part, from our religious beliefs. But this is all based on what we have been, what we have thought throughout the centuries. You know, it's in our genetic makeup what we are, and when we talk about order versus chaos. And we know that order is very Germanic. I know I'm always promoting Germanism, but Germans are famous for needing to have an orderly world. They always order their world. And, I recognize that in myself. and in, even in my family and in people I've known. So order is, and I think order is what we need. In order, sometimes if we become too disorderly, as we may have become, then order needs to be enforced. And people don't always like to be ordered about because we've got this idea now that we should all be free and we should make up our own minds about everything. And we should, if we want to think this or we want to think that, that's our right to do so, and so on and so forth. But I go back again to the idea of how weak we have become. As Montfort points out, how is it that Europe, for example, is being overrun by Muslims, or Germany being overrun by being Turks coming in and doing as they want? And nobody seems to be able to do anything about it. And here in the United States, why is it that all these mestizos come into our country and we can't stop it? We're not stopping it. Why are we so weak? Because we have allowed this idea of freedom and individualism to take over, and individual rights. And we are convinced then when we're told by the elites, well, everybody has rights and we don't, you know, and this is a kind of a libertarian type of thinking too, which I don't go along with anymore. And because, this is what it leads to. So if we're going to turn this around, I think we have to get very serious. And I don't think our speakers and people and our well-known names and so on are doing the job that needs to be done. I think they're too unwilling to come down on with a kind of more dictatorial type of talk, which is probably going to be necessary. Not dictatorial, but you know we have to create what is necessary, and then say, well, you know, this is what we need to do. And somebody has to make it happen. You know, they're always going to point to National Socialist Germany as the example of when somebody really laid down the law and created a very orderly society and did a lot of things that are not approved of now in order to bring that about. Like removing people from positions of influence in the country who they thought were not were the ones who had put it into the mess that it was in, and then removing people from the country. And this is actually what needs to be done in Europe and in the United States, and we all know it, and people talk around it, but they won't say it. They talk around it, and then they want to be friends with these people who need to be removed. They want to say, well, there's good ones and we have all these good ones. And well, it's just a certain amount of them. And they start backtracking. It's pathetic. It's pathetic. And I hope we can talk about this more in the second half of the program. I'll remind you now that the call in number is, where did it go? The call-in number is 1-855-477-2283. What we want to talk about is our culture, what kind of a culture we should have. I think Manfred spoke very eloquently about the rights that we have to have the kind of nations that belong to us. And that we have given this up. We've just given it up. And now we don't even think we have a right to it. And we think we have a right to it, but we have to ask permission from the people who are the emigrators, if it's okay with them. So I know it's a big job. I know it's not easy to get rid of the system. But I think we're not at all clear. I think we're at odds. I think we have that's really the point, is that people are saying various and assorted things, and there's no strength and no single-mindedness that we have to actually follow. And it's a tough line. We have to take a pretty tough line. And that's why it is seeming to me that we have to go a very clear-cut racial route, which many of our people who are well-known speakers do not want to say out loud in public that they are that they want a racialist division in our living spaces. They don't want to say that. They won't say it. They talk about white identity. They talk about white rights. They talk about, well, we have a right to pursue what's good for us. This is not enough. We need to be much, much stronger than this. And I think we need a common religion to tie us together. And with those two things, I don't think anything can really defeat us. I think we can come back. But without that,
we'll be right back with more on The Heretics Hour. You're listening to VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
From FSN, I'm Kate Moody with the latest world news. A prisoner swap between Israel and Hamas is expected to begin on Tuesday. Israel has agreed to free more than 1,000 Palestinian prisoners in exchange for the release of Gilad Shalit, a young soldier who was captured in 2006. 477 Palestinians are set to be released in the first phase, followed by 550 more in about 2 months after Shalit returns home. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon hailed the deal as a positive step towards resolving the Middle East conflict.
The recent announcement, particularly on this exchange of prisoners, that is very welcome, and I sincerely hope that this will give some positive momentum for their relationship for peace and security.
U.S. President Barack Obama has begun a 3-day bus tour to promote his jobs plan and stump for votes. He hopes to push elements of his $447 billion proposal through Congress piece by piece after the bill failed a procedural vote in the Senate last week. Republican leaders have indicated they would consider parts of Obama's plan, like tax breaks for the middle class, but not the full package, which includes new spending on infrastructure projects. Speaking in North Carolina, President Obama said Republicans don't have a better plan to create jobs and boost the economy.
They said no to putting teachers and construction workers back on the job. They said no to rebuilding our roads and our bridges and our airports. They said no to cutting taxes for middle-class families and small businesses when all they've been doing is cutting taxes for the wealthiest Americans. They said no to helping veterans find jobs. Essentially, they said no to you. Because it turns out, one poll found that 63% of Americans support the ideas in this jobs bill.
An official report is expected to conclude that former UK Defense Minister Liam Fox broke the ministerial code of conduct by not clarifying his relationship with a friend who was acting as his advisor. Adam Werety had no official government role, but was granted access to the Ministry of Defense and met with foreign officials. But the report by Cabinet Secretary Sir Gus O'Donnell will say that Fox did not gain financially from the arrangement. Fox resigned on Friday, saying he'd allowed the lines between his personal life and government work to blur. Our UK correspondent Ollie Barrett has more.
Some very serious criticism of Liam Fox's behaviour and his relationship with his friend Adam Werety in this report, meaning that had Liam Fox not already resigned on Friday, he would likely be having to do so now. What the report doesn't accuse Dr. Fox of having done is benefited financially from any of the actions of his friend Adam Werety, which probably means the government can avoid allegations of corruption and issues of that matter, and probably means that Liam Fox may be able to return to front bench politics at some point in the future.
This is FSN. Iran's president.
Let's return to the Heretics Hour, brought to you by VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com. And now here's Carolyn.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Well, now we're in our call-in hour, and I may not have any calls, but the number is 1-855-477-2283, and you're welcome to call in. If you have some comments on this, and the reason I bring this up the way I'm doing is because I think it's so important that we do have dialogue. And I don't find much going on. You know, it's true that even our people want to be entertained. They don't want to be faced with these issues because they don't feel like they know what to do about it. And there's not much that they can do about it. So they're hoping somebody will come along and do something about it. But I think that our leadership, and I'm talking about our white, those who are white identity, white racialists, so on. I think our leadership is not doing its job. That's really what I want to say. And what should they be doing? Well, they need to be expounding in a stronger fashion because we are coming up to, we are at a real crossroads, and we're acting like there's still a time or a way, or else people are have just given up, which is kind of sad. But not everybody will give up, and so those who do give up will go by the wayside, I guess. We know we need a homogeneous society, and in that it's easy to describe the culture. There is a culture, but in a mixed society. And the more mixed it gets, the more so. Culture, it becomes non-existent, and it's only what sells. So we become economic beings, and this is what we have in the United States today, basically, and probably in Europe. It's all economic, and people are there for economic reasons, and people only live for economic reasons. And so we are on our way to I'll use the word race mixing. We're on our way to a totally race mixed world, if it's based on economics. Now, here's a writer who I like to read, and I took this down. He talks about finances and the economic picture and so on, and he says, "Look at the average American worker. Is he smarter than a Chinese worker? Does he work harder than an Indian? Is he better trained or more skilled than a Brazilian?" He's implying no. No. So why do we think that American workers are in demand or going to be paid what they used to be paid? Because we have now been joined with all these other peoples, and work has been taken to their countries, and they've also come here. And they're good workers, and they have, of course, have worked for less. And so this changes our entire lifestyle, and world. The only way to stop that is not to have mixed ourselves together with all these people, to have remained, to have kept Europe and America and so on separate, and kept our knowledge and our specialties and so on, our abilities to ourselves, and not shared them out the way we've done. Now, who did all this? Well, some bad people. But we didn't seem to. You know, we were taken in by the propaganda, and we go along with things. I remember it all happening. I know how it all happened, and I didn't know any more than the other people, because you're kind of railroaded along. Now, this fellow goes on to say that if you're a good engineer or a clever marketer, or you've got something, you know, some super duper education, you can still earn good money. But most people aren't, and most people don't have any real skills, actually. and even people who went to college. You know, you get a degree in this or that, but what do you really know? He says, not much. If you've got some luck and some pluck, you can use your skill to leverage yourself, you know, into something really good, but not everybody can do that. So the fact is, we don't have much hope of coming out, is what he's talking about, coming out of this recession that we're in say, in the United States or in Europe. There's not much hope that we're going to come out of this because the conditions of that we used to go into recessions and come out of them in the past are not the same. So our economy is not booming and is not going to be booming because of globalization. Now, we were promised that when globalization that we were going to it was going to bring us a lot of good things, and we were going to make more money. Or what happened actually was that things got cheaper. Our products got cheaper for a while. They're still cheaper, but nobody's making any money. Most of the people are not making money, and they're making less. So what's happening is that we're becoming like the rest of the world. We're becoming like the third world. So this is mongrelization. And once we become on their level, then we'll just start associating with them, thinking of them as in the same way. We'll start breeding with them and mixing with them. And this is what is wanted by these globalists, I guess. I don't know what else to call them. We need to get a clear idea of who these people are. Now, this idea of these revolutions going on in the world today, the Egyptian Spring, or what, Arab Spring, and now Occupy Wall Street and so on all over the country. I said earlier that this was not the way to go. The National Socialists, I'm going to go back to that as my ideal regime for white people. They didn't mob in the streets like the communists did. And when Hitler worked to take over power in Germany, he knew he had to have a working government. He didn't just mob around and then say, well, you know, take over. And he had no idea what to do. He had all kinds of ideas of what to do. He had been working all that time developing economic programs and diplomacy policies and all kinds of policies that when he did get into power, he started putting them in place. So he had a lot of experts around him all the time. He had a lot of specialists, and he had people to put into all the positions. So this is the way it has to be done. I know we have people who are working at things and doing things that I don't know, that I'm not in on. But maybe they need to make it known more what they're doing, because I don't, if the rest of us don't see what they're doing, then we can't get much hope from it. I got in touch with, let me find this here. With Gunter Deckert this evening, and was asking him what he was up to. And it turned out that he had just been to a secret meeting in London. Well, he didn't call it a secret meeting, but he said that he had been to a New Right meeting in London. And he didn't say he gave the talk, but he said it was on, he just mentioned human rights theory and reality in the smaller Germany of today, which is what he likes to call Germany. And so I Googled it, and I found, here's one item from indymedia.org UK, which is, of course, the anti-racists, the super right liberals, or the anarchists. This is a website of theirs, and they reported on this meeting, and they called it a secret meeting in London, and says details of a secret meeting of the New Right on Saturday, 15th October. This was just this past Saturday. They call the new right a British fascist tendency with a taste for Holocaust denial and Nazi occultism. And it says Gunter Deckert, the leader of the far-right German NPD party and Holocaust denier. Well, see how wrong they are. Gunter Deckert is a former leader of the NPD, but he has not been the leader of that party for a long time. They go on to say, and Jonathan Bowden, former leading member of the BNP and leader of the New Right, will be speaking. This tendency is linked, they call it a tendency, whatever that means, this is linked to Troy Southgate and the so-called national anarchists in third position that infiltrated green anarchists in the animal rights movement. Anyway, it says that what took place there was, I guess they met in sort of a secret thing, wasn't really secret, but so that they wouldn't be disrupted by these anti-racists. But it says that Gunter Deckert spoke of human rights, : theory and reality in the smaller Germany of today. I like Gunter, who says, I like that he calls it that, because I think I might have someone on the line. Okay, he calls it the smaller Germany of today all the time, meaning that it's not permanent, it's of today, because this smaller Germany is not what Germany should be. Well, we'll continue with that after the caller. Hello, caller. Can you give me your name and where you're from?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you.
Okay, fine. Yeah, I'm calling on Skype, so that's always a problem. I'm Bob in D.C. The problem, Carolyn, it's the Jews. And you got to name the Jews. You can't call them the ultramontane. You can't call them the Illuminati. It's the Jews. And I mean the Jewish elite, not the shopkeepers, not the plumbers. There are Jewish plumbers, believe it or not. But it's the Jews. So when it comes down to it, don't fail on that one, please. I had to hang up. I hung up on your show when you ameliorated that. I couldn't stand it, but I had to call in afterward because you seemed like you were hanging. And I'm just going to make it real easy for you. It's the Jews.
All right. Thank you, Bob.
You got it.
Okay. I'm not real clear what Bob was referring to there, but that's okay. If anybody else wants to call, you're welcome. Please do 1-855-477-2283, and we can discuss whether we should say it's the Jews and leave it at that, or whether there's more to say about it. I think there is. So I have never denied the Jews, but I don't want to make every program just saying that. I think there's a lot that needs to be said, and there's a lot that we need to do as a people, which, of course, we can't do as long as Jews are in control. And this is why when the National Socialists came into power, they removed Jews from positions of influence, and then they were trying to remove them from the country altogether, for which they got into a lot of trouble later. Now, looks like I have a second caller. Is there a caller on the line? Hi, caller. What's your name and where are you from?
Oh, hi. This is David from Massachusetts.
Well, hi, David.
Yeah.
How are you?
I've been fooling around with this Galaxy Tab I have, the Samsung Tab, and I think I heard some of the show, Carolyn. Were you talking about that guy about the immigration and Islam and the Occupy movement and so on?
Yes.
I just want to make sure I didn't have some archive show that I was listening to. But anyways, I'm still having problems though because I kept cutting out and I had to restart it. But I'll get it. I'll. Carolyn, it's terrible back here. But what I've been doing, Carolyn, with this Occupy Boston, I'm right in Boston. I'm down there all the time. These people are being watched by about like 40 cameras. They're surrounded by these surveillance cameras. on all these banks and skyscrapers and everything. But what I've been showing them, I believe it's in the Gospel of Luke, chapter 19. I think it's verse 13, where the Lord tells his servants to occupy till I come. Occupy till I come. And I've been showing these people that scripture. I've been testing their spirits, and just about all of them have this visceral reaction of hatred. That, you know, because they're Zionists.
What people are you speaking about that you're trying to tell about Occupy?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm sorry, Kellen. Maybe I didn't make that clear. Right in downtown Boston, Occupy Boston. They're occupying an area called.
The Occupy. Of course, the occupying people. All right. And yeah. You're trying to tell them what?
I went down there. I usually test people's spirits, and the Lord shows me how to test their spirits. So the Lord told me to go down there and show them the scripture, occupy till I come.
I'm following you now.
Yeah. And they all have this visceral, hateful reaction to that because they're Jews. The vast majority of them are Jewish, you know, and they're communists and Zionists and Marxists. And Bolsheviks and Zionists, whatever term you want to use, and they hate that, none of them accept that the Lord's words, "Occupy till I come." So they say they're Occupy Boston and Occupy Wall Street, but boy, they sure don't want it to be misunderstood that they're obeying the Lord Jesus Christ by occupying until he comes. Certainly not. So, but what's interesting, Calvin, then I have them, and most of them won't read it, because you know how the Jews are. They won't read the New Testament. But about half of them will read the very next verse, and it says that his citizens hated him. And they would not that he should rule over them, and this is the reaction I get from these people, that they want to occupy, but they don't want to occupy in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ.
Well, why would you want to get Jewish people to read the New Testament, Dave? Do you think that we should try to convert Jewish people to
Christianity? No, you're misunderstanding me. Okay. You're misunderstanding. Gentlemen, you're misunderstanding me. I don't know what they are, but I found out what they are as soon as I showed them that occupy until I. Well, actually, I do know what they are because I've been around these people all my life. But I'm not trying to convert them at all. I'm not trying. I'm exposing them for the hate filled people that they are. They're I call them Judeo anti Christians, but they're also Judeo anti Muslim. They're Judeo-anti-German, they're Judeo-anti-Russian, they're Judeo-anti-American. And what it is the Hegelian dialectic, it's the pressure from above in Washington, D.C., the District of Communists, and the Communist Intelligence Agency. And these scum are the pressure from below. And they're working together, it's the Hegelian dialectic, and no patriot should have anything to do with them. So what I'm trying to say, Carolyn, is, I show them it's a no-brainer. I mean, they're calling it Occupy Boston, Occupy Wall Street. So I show them the scripture where Jesus said, occupy till I come. And I test their evil spirit. And boy, are their spirits evil. And boy, do they, what a hatred. We're occupying, but we didn't know that was in the Bible, but we're sure not occupying to obey. That imposter, the Jesus that we don't believe in, and so what I'm trying to say, Carolyn, is these people are mostly Jewish, and then they got some liberal idiots and everything.
And that's it. If they're not, they're also liberals, and
their power mentality is. Pardon me. Parasites too, because I said they want anything for free, and I said, hey, what about going back to the old Protestant work ethic? Like, well, you work hard for what you get, but you can keep what you work hard for. You don't have government gunslingers kicking your door in and putting a gun to your head. These filthy government gunslingers from the illegal revenue service or the Israeli revenue service or whatever the hell you want to call those bastards. But it's no good, Calvin. We shouldn't join in at all with the. The Communist Intelligence Agency knows the American people have just about reached a boiling point. So so this is a staged opposition to try to beat us to the punch. We should have nothing to do with it.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think it's staged because they know that we need things like this. And they know something's got to, and they have things with it. It's like letting off steam. And then people think that something's going on and everybody's paying attention to this too. And then the politicians use it. Now Obama's going to use it for his election campaign. They're going to try to because they know that the Republicans can't support something like this. These masses in the streets and so on. So the Democrats will get behind it and support it and try to get the votes from this.
Exactly, Carolyn. That's exactly right, Carolyn, because they're already doing it. We got a black man. We got a black governor in this state called Devil Patrick. Only you spell Devil D-E-V-A-L, not D-E-V-I-L, but it might just as well be D-E-V-I-L. We got this governor, Devil Patrick, and he's already been down there, saying he's been a part of the 99% and everything. So in other words, this is just going to be another Jewish control thing. It's going to be commandeered by the Democratic Party, just like the Tea Party is were commandeered by the Republican Party. And we should just hold off, Carolyn, because real opposition is building in this country. And actually, if people will just, I wish I had access to my websites. I lost the password. My life, I suffer persecution like crazy, Carolyn. But I had an old web blog, and I haven't been able to maintain it because I don't have the password. I'm not good with computers. But if people will go to davefrommassachusetts.wordpress.com and read my editorial, Two Can Play Trash. There's your answer right there. Two Can Play Trash. I gave the people the answer if they wanted. But if they want to just continue to cooperate with their own destruction, then don't play trash. But if you really want to do something, read that editorial that I wrote. So there's our answer.
What is that again? Is that Dave from Massachusetts spelled out all the way? That's your website, .wordpress?
Mark Glenn gave it that name. He before that, because I didn't know about computers. He set me up with this web blog. I don't have the, but it's davefrommassachusetts.wordpress.com. And there's about six very good editorials that I wrote on it.
Yeah.
But the best one, we have all the power. And just read Two Can Play. It's much more effective than the stupid Occupy Wall Street and Occupy Boston. If the people will read Two Can Play Trash, God has given them their answer and showing them wherein their power lies. If they'll read the editorial on my web blog, on my old web blog, Two Can Play Trash.
Okay, well, I'm going to go and read that, Dave. And I've never gone. I think I went to your website a long time ago, but I haven't for a long time. So
I'll give you a clue. Every dumpster and every trash barrel in this country should be full to overflowing. And you, if you're serious, if you're not playing games, you read Two Can Play Trash. Because I can't do this alone. Everybody read Two Can Play Trash and get on the ball and stop whining and complaining.
Tell us what you think we should be doing, Dave.
Well, on Two Can Play Trash, I'll give you this quickly, Carolyn. I cite everything that they've trashed. They've trashed everything. And I list a whole bunch of things that they've trashed. But the answer is, Carolyn, we can throw the enemy's money away. How would you like to be able to throw all the enemy's money away? Well, we have that power, Carolyn. The lifeblood of this evil system is advertising. They control us through advertising. At all these convenience stores and everywhere you go, you take these betting slips, these credit card applications, all these newspapers, free newspapers. All in Boston, we got these magazines like Stuff and Improper Bostonian and this wicked evil communist Phoenix newspaper. And you just take that stuff and throw it right in the trash when you get a paper out of the newsstand, that Sunday paper. Take the whole bunch of the damn papers and throw them right in the dumpster. You Americans have no excuse. juice. You would like to whine and complain, but you don't want to fill every dumpster and every trash barrel. All these free newspapers and free offering to rent apartments and to buy homes. And also the salacious advertising, they use these American women are nothing but filthy Jewish sex objects now. And so they're trying to promote all this stuff, using these American women as filthy sex objects. Well, there's no excuse for every dumpster and trash barrel. Usually by all these free offers, there's a dumpster and a trash barrel.
Yeah, okay. All right, we're going to the break. Dave, thank you for your call. And
we'll be right back with more on the Heretics Hour. You're listening to VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
One of the major grievances uniting protesters across the U.S. was what they say is anger at the government for putting corporate welfare above that of citizens. But that point seems lost to much of America's mainstream media, so activists are getting creative to get across that point, as RT's Ganesh Chikian explains from Washington.
Their discontent, loud, and graphic. Thousands of Americans have resorted to banners and T-shirts to get their message across, that of frustration with what they see as the government acting on behalf of big corporations rather than the people, message which the protesters say their media failed to deliver.
A lot of the media feels like these kinds of events don't deserve coverage. Sometimes all you get when you do something like this is a photograph. And so it's very important for the message to be seen.
Those simple, oftentimes handwritten messages that people carry on their chests have often been subject to mockery.
What is the sign?
Occupy Wall Street, brother.
Host of the Five.
Power to the people.
Power to the... What does that mean?
It seems the only fault of these people, as presented in the American media, is that they don't all have a degree in economics and finances and are not able to explain their grievances in professional economist terms.
Various groups emboldened to cheer the end of the greatest system known to man and replace it with what? Who cares? Let's nap.
The protests on Wall Street are mindless. When you ask people in Wall Street what they want, they don't know.
The acts that took place over the last 30 years with regards to national debt and debt within the system generally, all of these things are very complicated and difficult for the general public to understand. And people in the media and people on Wall Street like it that way, because if you don't understand it, then you don't get what happened. But the American people know that they've gotten hosed. They've lost their jobs. They've seen them offshore to China. They've lost their houses. They saw a huge run-up in home prices and then a collapse. And people are saying, you know what? I know that I've gotten screwed by all of this, but I don't know how I got screwed.
But Americans who took to the streets are looking to express themselves by means other than motivational T-shirts and banners, which, as graphic as they are, hardly convey the full message of the movement. The demonstrators are spreading their own paper now, called Occupy Wall Street Journal, which details what they're unhappy with and makes it clear that they're not rooting for one particular party. It also warns against, quote, political machines and their PR slicks taking control of the protest message.
One word to describe these ongoing protests from the beginning is frustration. On their T-shirts, on cardboard, on the backs of pizza boxes, as we've seen, people express that frustration. But as the movement grows, the ways of getting their...
Let's return to the Heretics Hour, brought to you by VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com. And now here's Carolyn.
Well, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Carolyn Yeager, and we have a half hour to go on this program. So if you want to call in, the number is 1-855-477-2283. I know that these are big questions and tough questions, and people don't really want to tackle them. I give a lot of credit to Dave. Dave from Massachusetts. He is really a good person, a good racial comrade to all of us. And some people might think that. Well, I don't think you do. I don't think you wouldn't make fun of his religious talk, but you might think that it's not pertinent or something. But maybe that's what we need to do. Maybe we need to all get a little more humble and sincere as he is, and think about what is good for our people, which he does. He does. He's, I think, a loyal white man. So he understands the connection between race and religion, and he's a Christian. And he's not a Judeo-Christian. Now, I think we need to, probably get some religion. but we don't want Judeo-Christianity. And we need to distinguish very carefully between what is a true Christianity. And it won't be the same for everyone. We can't become so uniform that there can be no variation, because we're all, you know, we still do have individual minds, but we do have to find a way to come together in our beliefs, because it supports us. You see, we need to support ourselves. Well, Dave is calling back. I don't know why Dave is calling back, but let's see what Dave has to say. Okay, hi, Dave. I guess I have to say yes to Mike or something. Okay, hi, Dave.
Oh, Carolyn, yeah. Carolyn, listen, I have it on my iPad. It's still there. There's your answer. The Lord God has given you the answer. And it's to be found on my old web blog. I don't have the password to get in there because I suffer fierce persecution.
Well, tell us, Dave.
No, you and otherwise I'm done with you. If you can't go to davefrommassachusetts.wordpress.com, if you haven't got that, and go and read my editorial, Two Can Play Trash. Otherwise, gave it to Jack McLean a long time ago. And he never even thought.
Dave, you already gave us that, and I don't want you to repeat. If you came on to repeat what you've already said, then I'm going to have to.
No, you missed the point. You missed the point. The reason I called back was I found it. It's still on the computer. I just brought it up. I just reread it. It was inspired of God. It's your answer. So if you're serious, just read that. See you later.
Okay, so he wanted to tell us that he just read it, he just found it again, and it's there, and that we should all go and read it. All right. Okay. Well, we need, as I was saying, you know, we need something to hold us together, and we are European people, white people are very individualistic. But we can't be so individualistic that we can't support the things that we share, even if we would rather do something else. Because these times, we either support ourselves, or we are going to be probably done in and taken over. So that's kind of the way it stands. I don't like to be so depressing about it, but you know, we have to make some decisions. And I don't think that our leadership, our white nationalist leadership, is up to the job or is coming up to the job. I think they're doing too little and they're not speaking out strongly enough. Now, Dave was talking about throwing everything in the trash. That's not a bad idea, because there's an awful lot of stuff that we carry on with, which we shouldn't. Now, what could we be throwing in the trash? We could be throwing our televisions in the trash. None of us who are serious about coming together as a racial society and having control of our societies again, should be watching television. Why? Because it's total Jewish propaganda. As somebody said, it's like having a rabbi whispering in your ear every minute that you're watching that. There's nothing on there that is what we should be taking in. The same thing and I don't have one. And the same thing with newspapers. We shouldn't be reading the newspapers. You can see enough news. You can get magazines, a few. I guess there's some that might not be too bad. You can watch some things online, some news, and that should be enough. The rest of it we shouldn't be participating in. And therefore we should not be buying hardly any of the products that they're selling. We should not be chasing after this stuff. And one thing we definitely should not be doing is pornography. What did I see? I should have put that on here. I saw the other day there was something I guess it was on TV, or it was a video anyway. I think it was from some television network, but a white couple. Some of you probably saw this, a white couple that they were both out of work, and they decided they learned about something called homemade or casual porn, where they could sign up with some company and they could photograph themselves doing sex in a kind of a, you know, pornographic way. And then that would, there are viewers who pay. And when they find couples that they like, there are couples who do this. This is something I learned about. And when they pay so much, like maybe $25 or something, to watch it once, a 15-minute session of this couple. And they make about $1,000 a month. And so they gave up even trying to work in anything else. They have this young child. It looks like it's about 2 years old or so, a little girl, and they want to be able to buy nice things for her and buy nice things for themselves. So they're doing this now, and they don't really like it. They're finding that it has its downside, naturally. But they're doing it because now they're hooked on this idea that they don't have to go out and work. They can do this about 3 times a week, I think it was, 3 or 4 times a week, and make $1,000 a week. Now, $1,000 a week is not a lot of money. If they're not going to make any more than that, pretty soon that won't be enough, but they'll be used to doing this, and they won't want to do anything. Well, this is definitely the a way to destroy our white people, to make them slaves, in a sense, to this Jewish pornography system. And Jewish pornography is a huge business, and is terribly destructive of us and our people. And we should be doing something to get people unhooked from this. Now, this is where religion comes in. You know, we used to have strong religion, and a lot of people didn't do things for that very reason. And I guess it requires that. So when there's no religion, when there's nothing that says it doesn't, you know, matter if you do this, if you do that, or what you do, people start doing things that they wouldn't otherwise do, and it becomes, they get hooked on it. These things are addictive. There's all kinds of things. Everything that's bad for you, it seems, is addictive. That's the truth. So they get addicted, and we're addicted to porn. We're addicted to drugs. We're addicted to TV. We're addicted to not working. There's so many people not working, and they're just sort of not even valuable in the working world. And so we're addicted to welfare and having this support system so that we don't have to do things if we don't want to. So all of this stuff needs to be thrown out. Who's going to clean up our world? The National Socialists, here I go back again to Hitler and the National Socialists. They were about cleanliness and cleaning up. And they cleaned up the trashy Weimar Republic that had been going on, and all of that sexual excess and so on, and all that using of German people, and brought the German people back to a state of virtue and cleanliness again. And cleanliness is a real important aspect of the Germanic personality, the Germanic mind. It's not just actually being clean, not dirty, but it's also about cleanliness of a sort of like streamlining, cleanliness of the lines of architecture, or cleanliness in art, or in your living spaces and so on, in the way things look. Cleanliness is really important, and we need to bring some cleanliness into our world. Now they also encouraged religion. Christianity, the Christian religions, both Catholic and Protestant, were very important and encouraged in the Third Reich. Don't believe that they weren't, because they were, and we talked about that last week. So all of this, our leadership should be doing this. Instead, what are they doing? They're running away from anything to do with what they call Nazism or the National Socialist model that was put in place for us to look to today and say, this is the way our societies could and should run. It's certainly far, far better than what we have. Far, far better. Because what we have is put in place, it's a Jewish system. And how do we do this? How do we start doing this? Well, we have to want to do it, and then we have to not be afraid to speak in a reasonable way about what it is that we want and that we think we should have, because it's a part of our culture. We really need to make these distinctions. I'm kind of rambling here because I'm looking for something that I was hoping to find. Getting back to Islam and the misconceptions about it that Manfred Kleine Hartlager brings up. Somebody says, doesn't Islam mean peace? I mean, don't we have the idea that Islam means peace? No, he says Islam means devotion, or can also mean submission. The friendlier translation is devotion. The other, the less friendly, is submission. The word salam means peace, but it's not a synonym for Islam. And the Islamic concept of society is based on the division of humanity into believers and infidels, and Islam leaves no doubt that the infidels sooner or later have to disappear in history. Well, I actually believe that we should take on something along those lines ourselves, because we should have those who are the, not so much the believers and the infidels, but we should have the ones who are the insiders and the outsiders. We need to and the outsiders have to disappear from history, but from our cultures sooner or later. So this is what was going on in in Germany in the 30s. It was Germany for Germans, which was perfectly all right. And what was good for Germans is what they wanted, not what was good for outsiders, not what was good for the Jews, not what was good for the people who are immigrating into Germany, or the people that came there to work or whatever. It was what was good for Germans. And we need to get this idea back that we have a right to have in our land what is good for us. And we need to say it without apology, because too many of our people have been reduced to saying that we just want what you have in our own society. You know, we just want to be equal to you. This is kind of crazy to me. We need to be far more than equal. We need to own our own societies. So we need to avoid being too nice. You know, I don't have too much use for niceness. Now, here's another thing. The Turkish Prime Minister Erdogan has said that there is no radical and no moderate Islam, but only Islam. So Islam is not something that can be called, we have a liberal and a conservative aspect of it. And we should also have, what would we call it? Our nations, they are white Christian nations. We're not going to have conservatives and liberals. It should be a kind of a one thing that stands for what we are. And when you do that, nobody can take that away from you. The reason that we're losing our lands is because we don't know who we are, and we've bought into foreign systems. So going back to this Christianity, I know that's very tough for a lot of people. It's kind of tough for me, but I think that that we can accept something that is good for us without it, even if we're not the greatest followers of it. Because we will grow into it, and our children, and our children's children, who are born into a Christian society, will also take it as it will be different for them. They won't question it in the same way that we do now, and we will also have the proper teaching. We need the proper teaching of Christianity, because right now we have distorted teachings and distorted Bibles and all this Judeo-Christianity, which is not which we don't have. It doesn't have to be that way. So we would end up with something that is more overarching for all of us, to which we all belong. And if some freedoms that people consider freedoms now are lost, well, we won't be any the worse off for that, because these kind of freedoms are what I was talking about that turn into addictions, which lead us into bad habits and lead us away from being a strong people. We need to be a strong people. And it's obvious that we're not a strong people today. We're not a strong people. And if we don't understand that we're not a strong people, we're never going to get back to being strong. Let's see. I was talking earlier about Hitler and the Germanic people of Europe. He had a new vision. He had a vision of a stronger Europe. He did. People say he wanted to take over the world. What he wanted was to have a strong Germanic-ruled Europe that could stand up to the United States and Britain on the one side and the Soviet Union on the other side. He wanted to bring together, this was before the war started, he wanted to bring together the what he considered the Germanic nations, which were included the Flemish and the Danes and the who else was and the Norwegians and possibly the, probably the Swedes and even the Belgians yes and then unite Europe under that kind of leadership, because he saw it as kind of a two-tier thing, and he saw the Germanic peoples as being more better at organizing and running things, which is true, they are. So this was what he wanted to do, and it would have been very, very good, but it was done in by our by the Jewish world takeover. So now they're back to trying to destroy Germans' racial, the German racial quality through race mixing, and this is being encouraged big time in all these Germanic nations, and all these Arabs and other dark-skinned people are coming in there, and we are made to feel guilty. You know, the lighter-skinned and the more blonde people of Europe feel the most guilty for being the way they are when they see dark-skinned people. And they feel like they don't have a right to be as beautiful as they are when these other people are not. So therefore, they should they have to make room for them. People actually, our people actually feel guilty for their superior qualities. And probably there are those who think I shouldn't even be saying this, that we have superior qualities. But it just seems like we have to start admitting this. You know, there's an article that just came out by a Swiss politician, but I don't like everything he has said, but most of it I do. His Oscar Freisinger. And he is talking very strongly against Islam in Europe. I don't know if he talks about it against anybody else, but he says, you know, that we've gone mad, and that we have to stand up against this. He says the Islamic doctrine is intended to creep into our everyday life bit by bit and make Fortress Europe crumble from within. Well, he needs to say, or some of us need to say, that the Jewish doctrine has crept into our everyday life bit by bit and made our all of our white nations crumble from within. That's exactly what has happened. And this is why we need to take very drastic steps and get very clear about it. And what better way to stand up against Judaism and the Judaization of our societies than with Christianity, and a pure Christianity, not a Judeo-Christianity. And that connected together with race, with our white racialist distinctions, our white racialist wanting to preserve our white racial dignity and genetic quality, those two things together will do it. And if we don't use those two things, I don't think we can do it, which is why I'm saying, as I close off this program tonight, and I know it's been long and rambling, and I do apologize for that, but this I think is necessary, and I don't know any other way. And if we have a way, I think we need to take hold of it pretty quickly, because if we don't, we won't even have this opportunity. So think about that, ladies and gentlemen. Think about what's needed for our solidarity. And it needs to be more than just talk. It needs to be, we need to take this kind of action. We need to have rules and regulations to follow. It's not going to happen with people just with free choice saying that they will now, do this or that. It's got to come down as a kind of authority. All right, thank you for listening tonight. Come back next week.
Thanks for listening. The Heretics Hour returns Monday evening, 9 p.m. Eastern U.S. time. Join us at ReasonRadioNetwork.com.